right, welcome back to the Big Red Hockey Cast. We're knee deep into the off season officially. Akshay, how we doing, bud?
Doing okay. Long time since we've done an episode, or at least since I've gotten on the mic for an episode, but definitely glad to be back. So excited for our guest today. We got another alum at B. You want to introduce her?
Of course, of course. No, yeah, we were very, very lucky to sit down with an alumni from the class of 2014. She's a defenseman from Raleigh, North Carolina, two-time ECAC champion, as well as an Isabel Cup champion. It's none other than number two, the defenseman Alyssa Gagliardi. And so without further ado, I want to kick it right over to that. Welcome back to this edition of the Sin Bin here on the Big Red Hockey Cast. And today it's one of our special alumni episodes. Today we have a very, very special guest. We're joined by none other than an alumni of the class of 2014, the defenseman, Alyssa Gagliardi. Alyssa, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. Looking forward to it.
No, of course, of course. Where are you right now? I'm curious. Are you like still in Ithaca, or are you based somewhere
No,
else?
we're living in Philadelphia right now. But we're
Ooh.
actually moving to Rochester, New York this summer. So I'll be back in
Oh.
upstate. My fiance is going to school at University of Rochester Med School
Oh, that's
starting this fall.
awesome.
So we'll be
That's
back up in
awesome.
upstate and not too far from Ithaca, which will be
But
fun.
back to the cold weather, eh?
Yeah, exactly. So it'll be good though. We're looking forward to getting up there.
No,
I feel like there's more. I feel like there's more hockey being played in colder weather. So I
No,
think you're probably gonna. I don't know how much is going on in Philadelphia, but I think you're probably gonna get back to some more hockey in
Yeah,
upstate.
Rochester's a
So.
good hockey market, so that's why I'm personally excited that we ended up there.
No, exactly. And I mean, let's take it back to the beginning because you're from Raleigh, North Carolina, correct?
Actually, born in Pittsburgh, and my family lived in Philadelphia, just outside of Philadelphia here when I was like 7 to 10 years old. So that's actually where we played roller hockey growing up with our
Oh,
cousins,
nice.
and we first started ice hockey here in Philly, actually. So it's kind of funny to come full circle now.
Oh, wow.
And then we moved down to Raleigh, North Carolina when I was about 10 years old. And then my family's been down there since then. So I grew up mostly in Raleigh, kind of started hockey, I guess, officially here in Philly. But grew up mostly in the youth hockey in Raleigh, which was
Oh, yeah.
obviously a really very much a growing market at the time. Is to my parents' credit, like the first thing they did when they knew we were moving was look up like what hockey programs were in Raleigh, North Carolina for my brother and I. And luckily there were some good programs with good coaching, and it's just kind of really exploded in the last 15, 20 years with the growth down there. So it was cool to be a part of that.
Yeah, and I was going to say, you just mentioned you were kind of from the Philadelphia area. Did you grow up a Canes fan, or how does that work?
We actually grew up mostly on Penguins fans. We were born in
Ah, okay.
Pittsburgh. My parents are from Pittsburgh. My grandparents are still there. So we grew up really big Penguins fans. And then, being down in Raleigh since we were 10, and they won the cup in 2006 and everything like that. It was definitely something you root for. And I ended up working for the Hurricanes organization for a few years as well. So definitely a good spot in my heart to always be a Canes fan. But we started as Penguins fans. So
Oh, that's
two good
awesome. Are
organizations.
you rooting for them for this cup run?
Oh
Yeah,
yeah.
I have to say I'm definitely rooting for the
Okay.
Canes. They got some tough injuries and stuff like that right now, so we'll see. Hopefully it's a good run for them, but it's been an interesting playoffs for sure.
No,
No,
for
Alex and I
sure.
are both Rangers fans, so it was a brutal
Oh,
game seven.
pain.
Tough
Absolutely. Brutal game
time.
seven.
Yeah, tough one last night for you guys,
So
but
we hope you guys can finish the
beat
job.
the Devils. Yeah, it'll
Yeah,
be a
for
good one.
real.
They battled all year, so it'll be fun to see how that series goes.
No,
Yeah,
of
number one,
course.
number two in the Metro.
So I think that'll
Yeah.
be pretty good. Let's talk about position. What made you decide to play defense? Did you ever play any other position? Usually we hear on the podcast a lot of people started goal scorers and forward, but then as they mature in their playing styles, they realize, okay, either goalie or defense is more for me. So how was the process for you?
Yeah, I actually just kind of ended up as defense process of elimination. So I was actually, I think every kid wants to start in the forward. You want to start score goals. And then I actually really liked like goalie equipment, and I thought being goalie would be cool. So got to play goalie for like 2 years, actually, when I was 9, 10 years old. And I really liked it, but then I went to try out for the boys team. I didn't make it as a goalie, so my only option was to kind of become a player again, just to be able to be on a team. And so I switched back to defense on a girls team when I was 11, and then just really fell in love with it and really kind of felt like that was the position for me. So I played a little bit of everything, and I think it all kind of helps add up to just seeing the game from different perspectives.
That seems like such a an awesome experience to play goalie. I know I just played, I actually just finished up my PE class. I've been playing goalie recently.
Oh, nice.
Got into it, but I don't think I could ever make a team. I'm
always tough. Yeah, it's a tough one.
You also played 4 years at Shattuck St. Mary's before coming to Cornell. So, like, you know, what, first of all, what was that like? I've always wanted to ask that. You know, it's kind of boarding school, but also really big hockey school. So what's it like, you know, as a Shattuck alum, what's that like?
Yeah, I'm always super proud to have been part of kind of the Shattuck hockey tradition. We were actually like really lucky. Like my brother had gone up there the year before I did. And like, my parents, you know, we weren't like a hockey family. We had no idea like college hockey and all these things. And my brother happened to have a coach who was from Minnesota originally and told my brother to check out Shattuck. And he went up there, you know, got offered a spot to be at the school. And for me, I knew I'd have to go to prep school just on the girls' side. Like I played boys hockey till I was 14. And at that point, like they just get too big, right? Like boys start really growing at that age. And I pretty much topped out at 5'4" and wasn't going to get much bigger than that. So, you know, we knew eventually I'd have to go to prep school if I wanted to kind of pursue hockey. And I was going to go wherever my brother went. So we just got like super lucky that he happened to, you know, have an opportunity to go to Shattuck. I followed him the year after and I did all 4 years there for high school and just loved it. Like it's basically kind of a hockey factory. You play hockey, you know, 6-7 days a week and you have all the ice time. There's, you know, opportunities to go shoot pucks outside and, you know, the gym and all these things. And you're just surrounded by other kids that love hockey and you know, there's a good soccer program and figure skating there as well. And you're just around like a bunch of high school kids that just love their sport and want to really excel at it. And, you know, you go to school with kids that go and play in the NHL, you know, like even Derek Steppen, like on the Canes right now, he was a senior junior when I was a freshman, you know, like, so it's just cool to see how people kind of go throughout their careers. I was fortunate to play with, you know, Amanda Kessel and Brianna Decker and things like that on the Olympic team. So it's just really special. And it helped me grow so much as a person living away from home at 14, you know, doing your own laundry, figuring out, you know, time to do all the schoolwork and fit everything in. And I felt like it made my transition to college way easier because I had already been kind of, you know, I practiced every day for 4 years. And so when I went to college, like that was just something I was used to and living away from home. And the opportunity to learn from so many good coaches and players was just something I look back on and I'm really grateful for.
No, yeah, I was going to say, I'm sure having your brother made it easier living home too. I'm sure that can be difficult, you know, going to a boarding school. I mean, I never went to boarding school, so I don't exactly know what that's like. But, you know, just being in college, you're kind of ready for it. But at that age, I don't know.
Yeah, I think it was definitely nice to have my brother there. He was there for 2 years. So we overlapped for 2 years. And I think it definitely helped, you know, as a 14-year-old kid, you're kind of just moving halfway across the country and living in the dorms and stuff all of a sudden. So I think definitely, you know, having my brother there helped a ton.
I know you mentioned some names, but are there any like favorite or like really close people that you'd like to shout out or just mention that really made an impact on your experience at Shattuck St. Mary's?
You know, the coach, Gordy Stafford, he's still there, which is cool. But it was really cool because he was also like our English teacher, but he was also our hockey coach. So it's just, you know, it's always funny to kind of see the dynamic of, you know, you'd have him in English class and he's talking about, you know, like Greek philosophy and stuff. And then, you know, you go to hockey and he's like using, you know, the kind of teaching mindset as, you know, he coaches as well. And so it's really cool to see him. He's been there probably almost 20 years now and or more. And he's just a really special person. You know, I think getting to play with and against, you know, people, like I said, Brianna Decker and Amanda Kessel and things like that were just really special. Their competitiveness, like you could not help but get better because they were going to compete so hard in practice and they hated to lose. So I loved going against those kind of players in practice and, you know, getting to see how hard they work off the ice and how competitive and how much they wanted to win. And you couldn't help but kind of rub off on you.
Yeah, and I mean, this is also kind of a joke, but like, did kids actually go to class? Because you mentioned you're playing hockey, you know, six, seven times, eight times a week. Like, you know, how do you have time to go to class? You're playing so much hockey. I feel like that's.
Yeah, no, it's interesting because the schedule, like, we actually practice, or the girls' teams both practiced at 7 a.m. So like you wake up at 6, you trudge to the, you know, take the long cold walk to the rink across campus, you know, in the pitch black in the winter. And you know, you could get on the ice as early as 6:30. So I'd get on the ice at 6:30. We practice 7, 8, you know, 7, 8:30-ish, and then you're in class from like 9 to 4, and you've got like workouts, study hall, you know, all these different things,
Oh
and then
yeah, I
just kind
believe
of like go to bed at 9 p.m. and do it all again. So it
it.
definitely, like, there are some dog days where you're just like, you know, you call home and you're just like, oh, it just feels like the same thing every day, and it's a lot. But like I said, it was just like I loved the atmosphere, and yeah, the school is super supportive, obviously, with athletics. Like I think by my senior year, like they were only doing like half days on Fridays, because so many kids were traveling to tournaments or things like that. So they kind of modify the schedule, knowing that like sports are a big part of the experience for the kids there, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, I was going to say half days don't sound so bad at all. And then, you know, you also won a national championship with them in 2009. And, you know, so number one, I can't even imagine doing that with your English teacher and your coach, which is pretty cool. But, you know, what do you remember about that run?
Yeah, it was just really cool. Like we went to the championship game against Chicago Mission, and they had, you know, Kendall Coyne, now Kendall Coyne Schofield, you know, as their top player, and Megan Bozek, who became an Olympian, and probably a few others I'm forgetting. But it was just a good, you know, it was just a really fun game. And it was funny because we won it in Rochester, New York. And the team I was coaching with this year, we played at that rink, and it was like, I was like, oh, I recognize this rink, you know, like even back then, you just like walk in and you're like, oh yeah, I can like remember what it was like to kind of like play in that game there. And yeah, just a really special memory that, you know, you get to have in those kind of you know, developmental years that you can kind of carry with you, of like, here's what it's like to win, and then you want to kind of carry that with you into college.
And I was going to say one last quick question about Shattuck. Do you guys still like have a lot of alumni that keep in touch, or are you still connected with the school?
Yeah, they do some good alumni events. I haven't been able to get out to Minnesota much the last couple years, but definitely still keep in touch with some of the alumni. And I think the cool part is like, you just the hockey world is small, and then the women's hockey world is even smaller. So you end up crossing paths with, you know, the coaches and people you played with and against kind of all throughout those years. So yeah, it's you know, definitely some special memories and friendships that came out of that for sure.
So let's move on to the next level. After high school, college. So what was your college recruiting experience like, especially from being like from such a prolific hockey school like Shattuck?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of consider myself maybe like a little bit of a late bloomer. Like I wasn't this player that was super highly recruited. I was probably reaching out to schools more than they were reaching out to me. And it ultimately, you know, I think that year where we won the national championship, and you know, get to play and, you know, kind of show how I could do against a player like a Kendall Coyne or, you know, something like that, I think helped a lot. And I ended up looking at kind of Princeton, Providence, and then Cornell had reached out and had showed some interest. So I looked at a few of those schools, and you know, I loved visiting Cornell's campus, and obviously talking with coach and, you know, Doug Dara and the staff, and just kind of seeing what the rink and, you know, the whole kind of campus vibe. I think it just really, you know, they kind of say, you know, when you get to a campus, and for me, that's pretty much what it was. Like I loved my conversations with Doug, and the opportunity to play with some really, really phenomenal players. And I knew the culture was really competitive, and that's what I wanted. Like that's where I was coming from with Shattuck, and that's what I wanted, because to me that was kind of a no-brainer. Like, why wouldn't I want to get to practice with, you know, Canadian Olympians and national team players every single day? Like, that's just going to make you better, and obviously, you know, gives you a pretty good opportunity to be a competitive team as well. So I was kind of just really fortunate that the timing worked out how it did with you know, Cornell reaching out to me, and then just it being a really good fit. So I committed after my junior year going into my senior year, and yeah, just really lucky with the how the timing all worked out there.
I was going to say, do you remember when you first met Coach? Like, you know, what he was like back then?
Yeah, he's probably pretty similar than he is now. But yeah, no, I think I just remember like how passionate he was and knowledgeable, and just like how much you felt like he was investing in you as a person and a player. Like it just came across right away of like they were really going to prioritize, you know, trying to make every single player better every single day. And to me, that was just something super important and something that I really enjoy. And they just, you know, genuine people. I think that was the biggest thing too. Like you felt like that's who they were, and that's what the team was about, and the culture and what they were building. And they were just coming off the year where they went to the national championship too. Yeah. So that was really cool because, you know, there's just a kind of a cool buzz around the team and the program, and you kind of knew like, okay, there's something special going on here.
On the topic of coach, do you have a specific story that you remember and you still like tell yourself today, or like when you think back is like, oh, that's a good one, or that was a funny one? Because we know he has a bunch of stories, but we're not each player kind of resonates with a different one.
Well, that's a good question. I don't know if I have like a specific story, but I think, you know, he just had a really good way of kind of striking the right chords at the right time. I think we were fortunate when I was there, like we made 2 Frozen Fours and, you know, made the NCAA tournament all 4 years. So I think for me, I think it's kind of funny now because now I'm on the coaching side, and then, you know, you look back and like you end up kind of saying the same things of like coaches you played for and things like that. But I also think too, like, I just really appreciate like how he was so detail oriented, like with our video meetings and things like that. And like no stone was left unturned of like how we'd prepare for an opponent or how we'd be able to, you know, find success as a team or whatever it was. I think each season, you know, coaches constantly try and find new ways to get things to click with the group you have. You know, the group changes every year. And I just think that was something he was really good at.
And what ultimately inspired you, you know, I know this is jumping a little bit ahead here, but what inspired you to coach?
It's funny because if you would have asked me in college, I was like, I have no desire to coach. Like, even up in, like, I was playing after college, I'm like, nope, no desire, you know. And then it's kind of funny because, you know, 2019 comes around, I was kind of done playing competitively. And, you know, I'm working at a startup company and all that stuff in Boston. And then I'm kind of like, oh, I can't really imagine my life without hockey. Like my whole life has been hockey for so long. So it was a pretty quick like realization after I was done playing competitively. I think when you're playing, like you're just so focused on your own performance and development and, you know, taking care of yourself and all stuff that I was like, I felt like I had no energy left to like have a desire to like go to the rink even more to like coach other people. But then once you're done playing, you're kind of like, you miss that, you know, you miss helping other people get better and like have that experience you had. So yeah, if you would have asked me pretty much any year, I would have been like, nope, no desire. Don't want to be a coach at all. And then, you know, here I am a couple of years after done playing and pretty much all in on it. So
during your time with the Big Red, did you, like you said that you didn't really have any desire to coach, but did you ever have like a specific mentor that you looked up to other than coach that you really liked their like kind of teaching style or guiding style?
Yeah, I mean, I think the whole coaching staff, I kind of go back to they really cared about you as a person. You know, they cared about how you were doing in school. They cared about how, you know, like how you're feeling, you know, with just life. And so, you know, Doug, Edith, and then at the time I was there, Danny Bilodeau, she was the other assistant coach for my 4 years. And, you know, they were just really invested. You know, if you wanted to do video and watch your shifts, like they would do that every week and, you know, and things like that. And they were just really invested in doing whatever they could to kind of help everyone feel good about their games and find ways to improve. And I think that's something that definitely, you know, once I got done playing, I was like, that's a really cool thing that I got to experience through them. And, you know, you want to kind of be able to share that with other people.
But was there like a specific player that was also on the team that was like a mentor figure, like when you were younger or like when you first entered, like a senior or junior or someone?
Yeah, you know, our one class with Amanda Mazzota, Chelsea Karpenko, they were 2 years ahead of me. But they actually, you know, I ended up living with that myself and Lauren Slobodnik, our goalie, who was same year as me. We ended up living with them for 2 years. And so they just became really good. You know, they were great leaders. They were captains on the team. And Amanda Young, Candice Ogilvie, like those were just, you know, people that kind of just gave the lay of the land of like what, you know, they're 2 years ahead of you. So they'd been through like the growing pains of the program, where the program went from like losing seasons to all of a sudden now we're like top five in the country. And they were the people that made that happen, you know, on the ice. And they were just really great people. You know, Maz is someone I keep in really good touch with and cross paths with all the time. And we'll see her at my my wedding this summer. So it's you know, it's just really cool to have those kind of people that, you know, those 2 years ahead maybe, that can kind of like, hey, here's what we've like, here's some mistakes we've made, here's what we want to kind of give back. And then to live with them as well, like, you know, you got to ride to the rink with them every day and things like that. And they were just really great mentors.
And I was going to say, you know, during your sophomore year, you know, the Big Red made a statement going all the way to the semifinals of the ECAC, but they ultimately came up short against St. Lawrence. What changed going into that off season? Because you guys would come back to like go on to win two straight ECAC titles in both your junior and senior year. So like, what in your mind, was there something different about that off season, or what like happened when you came back in the fall?
Yeah, I mean, I think anytime, because that sophomore year too was the year we still made the NCAA tournament. We won that triple overtime game, you know, against BU. So I think the loss to St. Lawrence, like, it's funny because you don't remember like the exact score, things like that, but you kind of remember how you felt. You know, it was on home ice and all this stuff, and it's just, you know, pretty disappointing. But I think if anything, it's just like motivation. Like, you don't want to feel that again, especially in a game where we got to host the ECAC tournament and, you know, have our fan base there and stuff like that, and in our locker room and on our home ice. And, you know, you just kind of remember like, no, it sucked to feel that way, you know?
Yeah.
And so if anything, I think it just kind of, any kind of loss like that ends up motivating you to, you know, do a few extra reps or things like that during the summer and kind of come back with kind of that chip on your shoulder.
And then I guess going off of that, you know, what was it like to be named captain or co-captain your senior year?
Yeah, it was really special. I think I was fortunate to be an assistant captain my junior year with Lorianne Rougeau and Laura Fortino. They were the co-captains, and so I got to learn from them. And like I said, even the year before, like, you know, you don't have a letter, but you're looking up to the Amanda Mazzotas, the Chelsea Karpenko, you know, like, you're looking ahead and kind of how they carry themselves and, you know, the way they prepare and the way they practice and all those things. And then, you know, Raj and 40 were, you know, they end up going on to become, you know, 2-time Olympians and things like that. So, and they're just phenomenal players. So you just, you know, watched how they, you know, the extra reps they put in before and after practice and the warm-ups and cool downs and, you know, how they take care of their bodies and stuff like that. So I think then, you know, going into our senior year, Jess Campbell and I got to be co-captains, and it was just, you know, really special to have the opportunity to lead the team. And, you know, I think it's a lot of responsibility because it's also, you know, we had had, you know, the 3 years I had been there at that point, like, we had a lot of success, and you want to try and keep that going. Like, you don't want to be the year where, you know, you don't have success. And it's just a great learning opportunity to be in a leadership role. I think at that point, like, every, you know, every freshman class comes in, they've kind of got their own, you know, personality and kind of group dynamic and, you know, different size classes and stuff like that. And so you just try and find ways to get the team to gel right away and have that confidence and that preparation. So when you go into games and the big games that matter, you know, you're as prepared as possible and you don't want to leave with regrets.
Kind of going off that idea of success and that year that you were named captain, what was it like winning the ECAC title in 2014 during that senior year? And what made that run so special?
Yeah, that one was really special because we were at Clarkson. Clarkson was hosting, and we go to the semifinals. I think we were playing St. Lawrence, and like, we were down like 2-3-0, you know, with, I think, I don't even know how much time was left in the game, but we somehow like come back and, you know, we're kind of on the bench, like, oh, semifinals, like, we don't win this. Like, we weren't ranked high enough to make the NCAA tournament. And I mean, you're not really thinking about that, like, on the bench, but I think in the back of your mind, you're just like, this can't be it, you know, like, 4 years, we can't end on this. And I don't even remember, like, I just remember kind of the game-winning goal Emily Fulton scored. And, you know, I think it was just a really great kind of comeback. We just stuck with it. Like, I don't know how else to explain, like, you just kind of stick with the process. And it's like, hey, you're down 3 goals. Like, okay, like, we just need to get the first one, you know, and then you get the first one, you get the second one and whatever. I don't even remember the final score, but it was really exciting. I remember my parents were there. My aunt and uncle were in town to come watch. And, you know, again, you didn't want to lose on game one, and then they all kind of travel all that way for one game. Like, you wanted to at least give them 2 games. And then, yeah, we went to the championship game against Clarkson there, and you know, their home rink, things like that. And it's, you know, it's a 1-0 game. I just remember, you know, celebrating with our goalie, Lauren Slobodnik. She played phenomenal with the shutout, and it was just a really good battle. Just everyone willing to block shots and do whatever it took to win. We didn't have a ton of, like, that year we struggled with scoring at times. So we knew maybe my freshman and sophomore year we could put up, you know, 4, 5, 6 goals, like, pretty easily. We had a lot of good offensive talent. And I think, you know, my senior year, we were just a little younger and maybe didn't quite have that high end offensive depth. You know, we were missing Jenner to the Olympic year and stuff like that. Yeah. And so I think, you know, we were winning games by, you know, their 1-goal games. You know, we weren't always going to outscore people, but I think we got one, and then it was just like really good defense. And obviously good goaltending. So that was a really special one to end on, and one that's probably a little clearer in my mind than other games.
Hey, there's nothing more you can ask of your team. Although, you know, I'm surprised that you'd say, you know, despite winning the ECAC title, you're like, oh, you know, we had a little bit of an issue scoring there. I'm like normally that's unbelievable to think about that, though. But that's really cool that you guys were able to mesh as a team and not only and win back-to-back titles, for sure.
Yeah, and like, you know, beating Clarkson that game, and then that was the year Clarkson goes on to win the national championship. So, you know, part of you is like a little salty because you're like, oh, we showed we could beat them and they went on, you know, but just kind of the way it goes sometimes. And I think, definitely look back and proud of that win, that tournament, especially with, you know, how we were losing, you know, in the semifinals, and you know, you come back and just kind of stick with it and grind out a win.
Let's talk about your career with the Big Red personally for a sec. You finished your career with the Big Red with 88 points in 138 games, including 20 goals and 68 assists. I mean, as a defenseman, that's phenomenal. So, like, what do you attribute most to your success on offense despite playing as a defenseman?
Yeah, I just always liked the offensive side of the game. I always tried to just have a really well-rounded game. In terms of being able to play kind of any position, like, I kind of prided myself on, like, if we needed like someone to fill in at forward, like, I could figure it out. And so I think just one, again, we had really good offensive players, so I'm sure they helped pad my stats a little bit on maybe special teams or things like that, or you just give a Rebecca Johnston the puck, you know, and she'll do the work. But yeah, I think too, like, again, I look back and, you know, Laura Fortino, Lorian Rougeau, like, they're 1 year ahead of me. They were really just dominant players. And I remember, like, someone, even when I committed to Cornell, had said, like, oh, you're going to be stuck behind them for 3 years. Like, you're never going to start, you know, first unit, you know, power play, whatever. And on one hand, it's like, yeah, I guess. But on the other hand, it's like, I get to learn from two of the best defensemen in college hockey every single day in practice and compete against them and things like that. So, again, I think just having really good players in the program to learn from. And then, yeah, I just kind of always considered myself like a bit of a rover defenseman. Like, I almost like a fourth forward in a way. Like, I wanted to be aggressive when the puck transitioned. I wanted to use my skating ability to get up in the play and, you know, create odd man rushes or things like that. And so I always just really like the offensive side of the game. I think that's just, I've always kind of played that way. And so just kind of finding the balance, you know, with that at the college level.
Yeah, I mean, one of our favorite things about alumni episodes is talking about career after Cornell, right? So you went on to go pro. So what made you want to turn pro after your career with the Big Red?
Yeah, the interesting part is that pro hockey at the time in 2014 was pretty bleak. It was the Canadian Women's Hockey League was the only option, and there was one team in the U.S. in Boston. So for me, like, I went back and forth, like, do you want to keep playing or not? Like, I knew I wanted to use my degree, and you know, you have this Ivy League degree, you want to use it. I wanted to get some experience, but, you know, I was kind of focused on trying to make 2018 Olympic team. So, you know, you graduate Olympics 2014, you're graduating, and it's kind of start of a new cycle. So for me, just to keep playing, you just kind of had to, your only option was move to Boston, train there with other people that are training for the national team. And it wasn't glamorous by any means. Like, that year we made no money playing hockey. So I use the term pro loosely, but, you know, you're in the trained with Hillary Knight and Brianna Decker, you know, some of these players. And it was just kind of what you had to do. Like, if you wanted to keep playing, it was a sacrifice you had to make. And, you know, again, it was always a dream to make the national team and the Olympics. And so I think that's the goal for a lot of players. So it was kind of like, I'll do whatever I have to do. And did that till 2016. And then, you know, wasn't really going to make the national teams at that point. And so kind of decided to keep playing. And at that point, like, the National Women's Hockey League had formed. So we were making a little bit of money, like $14,000-$16,000 playing hockey. So not a living necessarily, but, you know, part-time gig basically, that's what it was. And so I was working full-time and doing that and then Boston for a few years. So for me, it was just, you know, the love of the game. I think at that time it was a lot of the mentality of like, oh, let's grow the game. And, you know, and then it gets to a point where you're like, yes, it's about growing the game and, you know, share, but it's like, okay, we need to, like, women's pro hockey needs to take that step where it's, you know, a livable wage and actually, like, real career path, not kind of a side job.
Exactly. Because, I mean, it really is good hockey for sure. And also going off of that, you know, what was it like winning the Isabel Cup with the Boston Pride in 2016? What was that like?
Yeah, it was cool. That was the first year of the NWHL. So the NWHL formed in 2015. And so that was kind of the first championship of it. It was a really good group of players and people. So it was a lot of fun. And again, as a first year, we all made money playing hockey. So, you know, we went there and we played at the New Jersey Devils, like their practice facility. It was a championship weekend. And, you know, anytime you win, right, like, it's really special memories and, you know, your family's there and things like that. And, you know, just kind of a cool bond you have with those players, you know, regardless of all the different directions people go, you know, in the next few years. Like, it's always kind of cool to look back on.
Yeah, hopefully a unified professional women's hockey league is on the horizon, because there's so many players and NBR alum in the P-Dubs that deserve that spotlight. So really, that would really be great.
Yeah, and I think with, you know, the big wake-up call for me was, like, leaving college and, like we had a great setup at Cornell, right? The awesome locker room, you got a great weight room, facilities, training room, athletic trainer, all this stuff, equipment manager, and then, like, I got out the first year of college, we're practicing like a D3 rink at like 9 o'clock at night, twice a week for like an hour. People have been working from 9 to 5, you fight Boston traffic to get there. You're lugging your bag in the winter. You're lugging your bag back out after, like, there's no you know, you don't have a locker room. You leave your stuff. There's a volunteer trainer with no equipment, you know, like, so it's made a lot of progress since then, but I think, like, we're really close to, with the PWHPA, like, we're really close to, like, making it where it's like, okay, this is truly professional and, like, players have the rights and the resources to, you know, like, college hockey shouldn't be the best, right? Like, professional hockey should be, like, where you're treated like a pro, like the NHL guys, right? Not saying those salaries or anything, but just the resources. Like, I don't think we've seen the best of women's hockey yet. Because you left college and it was like, you're kind of like on your own a little. And again, the NWHL and PHF has really improved a lot over the last few years. So I know more and more players are getting those resources. And I just think, we haven't even seen the best of like what women's hockey could be at yet, because it hasn't had the structure and resources and investment to really make it your full-time job and your focus. So I think it'll be really exciting to see where it's at in another 5-10 years.
Yeah. And then, I mean, you also had mentioned that, you know, you started coaching earlier. Like, you know, at what point did you realize that, like, because you said you didn't want to have to, you know, kind of be without hockey. You wanted hockey to kind of be more of a part of your life. Did you ever feel a desire to, like, kind of give back, you know, as a coach?
Oh, yeah, definitely. And that was kind of actually probably where I really started my coaching journey. Like, in 2019, kind of finished playing competitively. And I moved back to Carolina to work for the Carolina Hurricanes organization in a lot of youth hockey development, but specifically kind of like girls youth hockey development. So that was really important and special to me. You know, it kind of comes full circle, like, you know, 15 years after I had left and being able to just give back and see the growth and kind of help start and grow or support the growth of, you know, the girls youth hockey programs down there. Just like I said, it was really kind of a like full circle moment. You know, you leave there and you're, you know, you start there and you're 10, you leave and you're 14, you come back, you know, all those years later. And, you know, the Hurricanes, they're like made a role, like a female ambassador role, and a couple organizations have done some similar stuff. And Like there's investment in the growth there, and so I was happy to be a part of it for a few years.
No, of course. And I mean, you know, just one last quick question before we close out the sin bin here. So, you know, do you have any other comments or stories, like reflections that come to mind, you know, of your time with the Big Red, like, you know, how that influenced you as a player, how it helped you grow, you know, that kind of stuff?
Yeah, I think the one thing I always look back on that was just really special is like the support from the school, but also the town, you know, of, you know, I guess I can always speak to women's hockey, but I think a lot of the Cornell athletics, like, I think I look back and just feel really grateful how special it was to have been part of, you know, the Ithaca community. You know, we had the Cub Club, which was like a big sister, little sister program, which was awesome. And it's something I tried to basically start in Carolina, like pairing up our, you know, our older U19 girls that are like high school players with, you know, girls just starting hockey. And so that was a, you know, really special thing where you got to just be a mentor for a young girl, you know, female hockey player. And I think that's something that kind of can continue to take root, you know, in more organizations and things like that. So that's one thing I always really enjoyed. And, you know, I think I'm just really grateful to be there with the people I was there with. Like my, you know, my class was really close, and, you know, Lauren Slobodnik will be, you know, my maid of honor at my wedding this summer. Jess Campbell, like I just went out to see her out in Palm Springs, and, you know, she's coaching in the AHL now. So she's someone I lean on a ton. And, you know, just the friendships, I think it is just, you know, really cool and special. And I think the friendships with, you know, their teams on campus and things like that is really cool.
No, for sure. All right, Alyssa. Well, thank you so much for your time in the sin bin. But you listeners already know what's up next. It's the slap shot round right after this.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Slapshot Round, where we ask hard-hitting, fun questions and have you answer them as quickly as you can. So per tradition, we always got to ask the first one. Are you good to go?
Yes.
All right. What was your favorite study spot on campus?
Oh, that's easy. Man Library. We called it Club Man because it was like you were like kind of there studying, but it was also kind of social hour. So if you needed some distractions, there was plenty of teammates or other athletes that you knew kind of lurking around. So, we probably weren't our most productive studying there, but we really enjoyed it.
Do you have a favorite specific floor of Man? I know that, you know, some people tend to like camp out on like the second, third floor, what have you. And they have a little like it's like an impromptu social club. Pretty fun.
Yeah, I don't remember exactly what floor. Probably depended how like serious I needed to study that day. If it was kind of like casual study, maybe second floor. If I needed to like really grind it out, I'd probably head up to third floor.
Yeah, I don't study much in Man as an engineer, but I have heard that people complain that people don't stay quiet on the quiet floors.
So oh yeah, I'm sure we were like some of those people at times where it's just like catching up and whatever and getting some dirty looks. But hey, some days you just gotta, it's a long, long school year. So you got to try and find some ways to make it enjoyable.
No. Yeah, I was gonna ask right off that, you know, did you tend to study with, you know, friends, teammates, or just like alone? Did it depend on the case? You know, how badly you needed to cram for something?
Yeah. I think we tried to like buddy up with studying. I think Jess Campbell. So again, we were same class, but she was a comm major as well. So we were basically taking all the same courses for most of 4 years, and so she was a good study partner. And yeah, I just always tried to find some teammates or things like that to study with.
No, nice. And did you have any other pregame superstitions that, you know, were we always tend to ask this question, you know, because it's interesting to find out what wacky traditions there are.
We always played like soccer keep up, but we had like a version. I don't know if they still play it. We called it shoulders, but it was like, you know, you're trying to like keep up the soccer ball, but like the rep only counted if you like got one with your shoulder.
Oh.
So if you like kicked like five in a row with your feet, but then you got like two in a row with your shoulders, it was only that your score was two.
I've definitely heard and seen that one before games.
Yeah. If you ever I don't really know why we did that. I just kind of like, I think it was already there and I just started joining. But I always liked playing that beforehand because it was like fun, competitive, and before you kind of got really dialed into, you know, the games coming up.
Was there like a, was there like an individual superstition that you had though, like taping your stick a certain way, or the left gear has to come on before the right hand gear? Like,
yeah, I think I had a lot of like kind of routines and habits. Like I tried to be flexible. You know, if you know, you don't want to be too rigid where, you know, one thing doesn't happen, you're just like, oh, the world's falling apart. But yeah, I think just, yeah, I always try to kind of take my stick and do some visualization and things like that before we started warming up. And yeah, I probably put all my right stuff on first now that you mentioned it. So those are probably a couple like routines I had.
Mm-hmm. So right skate first always.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right skate first, right shin pad. It just feels right.
Okay. No. Yeah. I kind of get that. I understand the, like, I normally would go, you know, pants, shin pad, you know, socks. I've heard some people go shin pad, socks, then pants, but like, I don't understand that. And then, you know, you just mentioned, Jess Campbell, and of course she graduated in 2014, now assistant coach at, Coachella Valley for the Firebirds. And, you know, speaking of coaching from earlier, did you ever hear her talk about wanting to coach when she played?
You know, maybe a little bit. I think with Jess, like, she's always just been such a good communicator and just really good at empowering people. So I definitely wasn't surprised when that's the route she started going. You know, she was a phenomenal skater. And so she always had a passion for teaching power skating. Like, she would even teach us like after practice. And so I kind of always knew she'd go down the route of, in some way of kind of, I think her dream was like start her own power skating company and things like that, which she did with JC Power Skating. And, and then that just kind of, I think, naturally opened up some doors for her to, do some cool different things with, you know, different high level teams. And it ultimately ended up in, ended up with her in Coachella Valley, which she's crushing. So it's really cool to see.
No, that's awesome. And, you know, we've also heard some fun stories about Jill Saunier, and, you know, shout out Noxie and Cax from SDPN for sure, about her time at Cornell. Which of your former teammates had the most interesting and fun personality?
Oh, Jill. It might be Jill. Jill was just, she was just so funny because, like, she's just friends with everyone. There'd be like people, you're like, how do you even know those people, you know? And, but she's just really social, and she was a comm major as well. So we were a year apart, but ended up having some courses together, and just really, really great hockey player, obviously. And I got to cross paths with her a month or two ago at one of the women's hockey events. So it was really fun to kind of catch up, and, you know, she ended up making the Olympic team and things like that, which was no surprise. And but yeah, she's probably like one of the funnier, like more just funny random personalities that was there. But yeah, she's doing well.
Not sure if you're a big podcast listener, but do you have a favorite hockey podcast or show? And if you don't listen to hockey podcasts, do you have a favorite podcast that you listen to?
Well, I'll shout out Hockey Think Tank podcast.
Topher.
Yeah, yes. Tope. So yeah, we're I think him and Jeff Lavecchio, the other co-host that podcast, they just put out some really, really great content. So they're one I always try and tune into. Just, they have a lot of great guests. Spit and Chicklets, obviously, is pretty entertaining just to stay up to date on the news there. So those are probably the big ones. The Glass and Out podcast, the Coaches Site's a pretty good hockey one as well that I enjoy. I don't listen to it as consistently, but definitely some good episodes I've tuned into. So those are probably the three big ones there.
No. Yeah, I was going to say a little quick tidbit about Tove. I actually, ironically, when I was 6 years old, I have a picture with Tove and Ben Scrivens Lana Rink. And, you know, it's interesting now, almost like, you know, 12 years later, I got to interview him for one of these episodes of this podcast, and I showed him the picture, and he's like, oh, no way. Yeah, that's my
that's awesome. It's such a small world. I actually was like coaching a camp here in Philly this past weekend, and one of the girls that was also coaching with me, you know, she's a little younger, and she's like, hey, I think you coached me at the Cornell camp when I was like 14. I was like, wow, that's so crazy. You know, it's just such a small world. So
no, of course it is. And then I guess off of that,
Cornell representation in the podcasting department at least.
Yeah, gotta make the connection there. Big red connection.
Indeed. And then what was your favorite away rink to play in?
Away rink? I mean, Harvard was fun always because, one, just the rivalry. We had, you know, there's some good support from Cornell fans every time we went to Boston. I think getting to play at, we only got one game there, but Northeastern's rink is just really historic. Matthews Arena, just we only played the one game there, but it was just a really cool, you know, historical rink and pretty unique. And I think we ended up winning that game, so that always kind of helps that you leave there. But yeah, I guess not because their rink's nice or anything, but just Harvard because the connection. But nothing's like Lina.
Yeah, no, for sure. I would say Harvard is definitely my favorite away rink to go to. Although, I mean, in terms of like visual aesthetics, I would go with Hobey Baker in Princeton. I know actually he's from Princeton, so he's laughing
close,
here, but
close
you know,
to Princeton,
but yeah, close to Hobey Princeton. But,
really yeah, nice. Yeah, I mean, that's definitely a historical rink. Quinnipiac's rink is really nice, actually.
No, it is.
I didn't like, they're I don't know, really I just didn't like love playing there, but it's a nice rink.
I can say as a fan, I hate it there. But that's also because they have such like a kind of a rowdy atmosphere.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
Yeah. No. And that's also kind of my neck of the woods. I'm from Connecticut. So like
I
grew up going to, you know, the Yale games, the Quinney games, stuff like that. So like anything that was close to home, like Brown, like I know those rinks pretty well, but you know, that as a fan, it sucked because like, you know, yeah. We'd be the one guy, we'd be like, yeah, they scored. And then everybody else would be like, no, sit down. Like,
yeah, I guess that's how people feel when they come to Lina too. So.
Oh, yeah. No. But that's what's
beautiful. Get tickets, yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's what's beautiful about Lina, I think. And
best hockey crowd for both men's and women's hockey. Favorite pregame meal?
Probably just a chicken pasta kind of person. We usually have pretty simple, or like chicken rice and veggies or something. Nothing too crazy. I usually always made like a peanut butter and jelly, like on my like after pregame meal and like before heading to the rink for the game. Just like having a good little PB&J.
No, that's awesome. And I mean, like also, how did I'm curious, like how much weight training, or like when you worked with like, you know, physical trainers with the team, like how did that work? Like, you know, even in the preseason, like did you have scheduled like, oh, we're gonna lift this day, and then, you know, we're gonna do other exercises other days, even for off ice training?
Yeah, I would say actually our program is probably one of the, I guess I only know ours, but just talking to other people, other schools, like probably one of the more like dialed in like off season training programs. Just with, I feel like Cornell just, the standard is to like work really, really hard and do everything the right way. There's really no shortcuts there, which I think kind of leads to the on-ice success. But yeah, like when you get there in the fall, you're, you know, working out 3 days a week as a team with the strength coach. And in season, you're, you know, trying to do at least 2 days a week. In season, just kind of maintain and you know, injury prevention and stuff. And then as soon as season ends, you get like that week or two off and then it's back at it and you're training all summer long. So definitely get off the ice a little bit and get away from the rink, but you're still like in the weight room quite a bit, you know, other than maybe like 2 weeks of the year when you kind of get to reset a little after the season. And then it's like right back to building and looking ahead to next year.
Right off what you said about your pregame meal, I said the team is now big on like pregame coffee. What's your thought on that? Is that like, would you ever drink coffee before a game?
It's fine. I didn't even like drink coffee till like my senior year of college, probably.
Me
now
either.
And then, yeah. Then I just like, yeah, I would always have like a coffee or Americano, like head to the rinks and in Boston and stuff. But I wasn't a big coffee drinker in general, and I started by doing like half coffee, half hot chocolate, and then I slowly eased off the hot chocolate,
the mocha.
And then now, yeah, I love coffee. So but yeah, I wasn't a big coffee drinker in college, but I also just feel like high school, just like walk around, there's like high school kids like drinking like these huge drinks like all over the place now, you know. I'm like, oh, I don't know if you should be drinking coffee at 14, but
yeah. No, I mean coffee, like high school drinking coffee is more of like milkshakes and like they have a
it's like a dessert almost.
Yeah, it's very sweet. I mean, being like playing in Boston, you probably a lot of dunks, maybe.
A lot of Dunkin'. Yeah, Dunkin' actually sponsored the league for the first year, so we get like $200 of Dunkin' gift cards.
Oh wow.
So yeah, a lot of cold brew, Dunkin' cold brews and things like that throughout the years. But yeah, I wasn't a big coffee drinker back in the college days.
Aggressively sweet. But now on the topic of like hockey again. So I mean, you said Pittsburgh is your big team. Then I mean, being from Raleigh for a bit, like the Canes. So besides the Canes, who do you want winning the cup? I think we touched on it earlier.
Oh, man.
Well, if you would have asked me like a few days ago, I would have said the Bruins. I worked this year with like the Bruins East Coast Hockey League team as their skill development coach. So I would go up and work with them. And then I was actually doing a scouting mentorship with the Boston Bruins this year. Mm-hmm. So I got to know some people in that organization and was really rooting for them. But tough first round.
Indeed.
Yeah, that's a bummer for sure. You know, I think seeing McDavid win the cup would be cool.
Mm.
I would get on that bandwagon. Or honestly, like I'd be down for if the Canes don't win it. You know, I think a Toronto Edmonton final would just make the hockey world like explode. So I think that would be really fun.
Our producer would love that. He's Canadian, so he's gunning for the. He's a diehard Leafs fan.
I was excited to see the Leafs win, just because I'm like, you know, everyone's like, oh, I hope they lose, and I was like, you know what, the storyline is just so old of like always losing the first round. So it was just like, okay, let's move past it, you know. And you know, you want to see like the Matthews and Marners and Tavares, you know, like you want to see good players like make long runs at some point through their career and.
No, of course.
No, producer Mike is muted right now, but behind
he's screaming behind his muted mic right now. Yeah, he
I think Toronto Edmonton final would be
I'd be intrigued.
Canada would explode. So
for sure. And I favorite line of tradition.
Ooh, I mean I loved when the band played, like, you know, we're walking on the ice and every time after the like a goal gets scored, like I just love the band, like immediately like starts playing and that tune gets stuck in your head pretty quick. So I'd say that's probably the one. I think for the men's game, we never really had this for the women's game, but you know, I always thought it was kind of funny when they had like the newspapers when the other teams, you know, starting lineup was getting read and stuff like that. But yeah, probably just having the band there was really special.
No, yeah. I mean, I'll say the band definitely this year for the women's team, I mean, they had an absolutely packed barn for the Harvard game. It was nuts. The atmosphere was just so cool. The band, I'm telling you, the band makes the difference. And that's it, the final difference is the band.
The whole atmosphere changes when they're there. So anytime we saw them getting ready, you know, we saw them getting there when we were warming up or whatever, we're like, yes, it's going to be like good vibes.
Yeah. No, of course. And then another question that we ask almost all of our guests, because it's an ongoing kind of joke at our podcast, the Big Red Hockey Cast. So now you lived a few years in Minnesota, as we've said. And so the question for you is then, should Ohio be a part of the Midwest?
Yes. I always think Ohio's in the Midwest anyways.
Oh, that's great. I love that answer. No, half of my family is from Ohio, so I love that answer.
I like always think Ohio's like an hour. Are they an hour behind or no?
No, they're not. They're ironically not.
Yeah,
they're
I always the think only they are.
State in the Midwest that's like kind of not on, or at least half of it's not on Central Time.
Yeah.
Well,
so.
I mean, it depends who you ask, Alex. Yeah, some people will say it's not in the Midwest.
Mm-hmm. But no, exactly.
It doesn't feel like East Coast to me, so it must be Midwest.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I agree. I think East Coast has to be more happening than Ohio. No disrespect.
Of course. Well, you know, obviously, Alyssa, thank you so much for joining us here on the Slapshot Round today. You know, thank you so much. Also, congratulations on getting married this summer. That's awesome. And so, you know, let's go Big Red. You know, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. Really appreciate it. It's always fun to reminisce. And look forward to, we'll be closer to Ithaca. So I'm sure we'll be down and around campus at some point. And go Big Red.
Yeah. Oh, thank you very much.
Hey, Mr. Timekeeper, how much time is left?
1 minute remaining in the interview. 1 minute.
All right. So as per tradition, And always good to hear from Alyssa Gallardi. Man, what a nice conversation. And also huge congrats to her on getting married. You know, maybe we'll get an invitation, who knows? But anyways, you know, this is kind of a somber moment for us because it is in fact my last episode as host of the Big Red Hockey Cast. And so I wanted to bring back old times, and I have my old buddy Sean Cabrera with me here. Sean, how's it going, man?
Alex, it's going pretty well. Although, of course, you know, things didn't go as anticipated for me for the past two semesters, given prior commitments as well with ESPN. As those of you who may know, I broadcast for several sports here on Ivy League on ESPN. So not everything went the way I wanted to in terms of Big Red Hockey Cast, but I'm very, very grateful that I'm able to be here with you, Alex.
You were voted most likely to be broadcasting the World Cup. So, you know, we know where your true loyalties are, brother.
Well, fingers crossed, 2026, maybe. And given that's going to be between USA, Mexico, Canada, you know, maybe all three of us could be, let's say, in Toronto. Michael, you got to invite us there, Michael. You got to invite us.
Exactly. Exactly. Michael's probably smiling behind the camera. But, you know, it's really been, a true honor to work with you, buddy. And, you know, just this past year or two, it's amazing how far we've come. And, you know, it's awesome that we get to end it just like it started, you know, just the two of us. Those of you who don't know, it used to be just me, Sean, and Michael. That was the entire podcasting department, pretty much.
Yeah, it was humble beginnings. I mean, throwback to when we did our first interview with Cody Haskinen, and I remember.
Oh, man.
I remember the little bit of nerves, on my end at least, just the smallest bit. And then we had fun times, of course, with Morgan Barron and, of course, Nate McDonald. That was a hot
episode. Oh, my God. That was, hey. Yeah. That was definitely the most impromptu episode for sure. Having Nader on the pod, it's been awesome to see how far he's come in his career. And I also get to keep in contact with him, which is awesome. And I still keep in contact with Mots too. Mots was also a fun episode. But I got to say that Nate McDonald episode, though, you know, that was one where we really pulled the rabbit out of the hat, man. We had to do that in such quick turnaround that we came up with a great product. So that was pretty cool.
I also want to, of course, give to the fact that, you know, we moved from men's hockey to women's hockey. And I think it's a fantastic thing that we've been able to cover both sides of the sport itself here at Cornell University with legendary programs, and putting it legendary is almost an understatement on its own.
No, 100%. I mean, it's been a true honor. I mean, dude, you know, even making the transition, even working with, you know, Big Red in Beijing, doing that stuff, getting to sit down with, you know, Rebecca Johnston and Micah Zandihart, and like, you know, you're sitting on a Zoom call with Olympians. And I know Mike was, you know, having his fanboy moment as us two Americans are interviewing this Canadian gold medalist, but like, hey, it's awesome. That I wouldn't trade it for the world.
Likewise, Alex, likewise. And again, I could only associate good memories with Big Red Hockey Cast. And I also wanted to thank, of course, the listeners for spending their time with us, for essentially, you could argue, growing up with us in a way in the past year or so, especially with you, Alex. But still, I'm just very grateful for all these opportunities that were given to us, and the fact that, you know, we have very dedicated listeners. So a huge thank you, though.
Of course, like, you know, none of this would have been possible without them, for sure. Like, you know, without the line of faithful, we would just be two guys talking, which, you know, as much as I love that, it's so much better to, you know, have a platform to be able to speak about it, which is so cool. So, you know, from the bottom of our hearts, you know, we thank you listeners so much. It means the world to us to be here, you know, day in and day out talking hockey, especially Big Red Hockey.
And I know last year, you know, I did, or rather we did close it with the, you know, that this is just a chow chow for now. But again, even though both you and I, Alex, will be graduating, and as much as I want to say we'll be a chow chow for now, it'll be a chow chow just to some degree. Coming back as alumni, of course, one day we'll be there in the crowd with the line of faithful.
No, of course. Next time we get in here, you have to buy a ticket. Essentially. No, we had to buy a ticket anyways, but just won't be in the student section. Like, I already dread the day. It's going to be a sad day, but that day must come. And, you know, especially for the podcast, that day is here for us. So, you know, hey, why don't we close it like we always did, man?
Well, I suppose I could say, on behalf of Alex Breitenbach, this has been a presentation of Big Red Hockey Cast, a production by the Big Red Sports Network for and from the line of faithful. And of course, elevating the voices of student athletes all across Cornell University. I'm Sean Cabrera. Alex, this has been a chow chow for now.
Yeah, an amazing honor, buddy. I'm so happy to have shared it with you. Ciao, ciao for now, brother.